Welcome to HN Pod, your daily conversational dive into the top stories and discussions from Hacker News. I am Sarah, and I am here with my co-host, Mike.
Hey, everyone. Great to be here. Today is August 21st, 2026, and this is episode number 494. We are looking back at the most interesting trending stories from yesterday, August 20th.
We have a really packed and diverse lineup for you today. We are going to talk about a heavy but important reflection on the legacy of Aaron Swartz compared to modern AI scraping. Then we will look at a clever, if incredibly frustrating, web audio fingerprinting technique used by AliExpress. We also have a massive Rust supply chain attack to dissect, a cultural plea to stop pasting raw AI responses in chats, and a really cool show HN featuring an on-device AI model that auto-completes your live piano playing.
Let us start with the top story from yesterday. This was a blog post by a user named Specs on Curious Quail, titled, "Aaron Swartz was prosecuted for scraping, while Meta does it without consequence." It struck a massive chord on the site, pulling in over 1,100 points.
Yeah, this is one of those pieces that just drips with justified anger. The author points out the staggering hypocrisy in how our legal system handles data scraping, depending on who is doing it. Aaron Swartz, who co-created RSS and Reddit, was effectively hounded to his death by the U.S. justice system for downloading about 70 gigabytes of academic articles from JSTOR. He was facing 35 years in prison and a $1 million fine. Meanwhile, Meta has admitted to essentially torrenting 80 terabytes of books to train their AI models, and the worst they might face is a financial slap on the wrist.
The contrast in the use cases is what really got the Hacker News commenters talking. Swartz wanted to archive and disseminate human knowledge for the public good. Meta is doing it to power proprietary algorithms that print money for their shareholders. A commenter named Milkytron brought up a really vital piece of context that a lot of people forget. JSTOR actually dropped their civil litigation against Aaron. They did not want to pursue it. It was the US government that unilaterally decided to make an example out of him.
Exactly. And Milkytron pointed out the macroeconomics at play here. The government had nothing to lose by crushing a single activist, but going after Meta? At the scale AI has reached today in 2026, dropping the hammer on Meta would have wide-ranging economic implications. The US government is absolutely terrified of losing the global AI arms race, so they are turning a blind eye to massive copyright infringement. Being a rich public company provides you with legal advantages when your goals align with the government's geopolitical goals.
There was a really interesting philosophical debate in the thread about selective enforcement. A user named Anthony Mouse suggested that if you can prove selective enforcement in court, meaning you can show someone else to the exact same thing without being charged, it should automatically strike down the law. The idea is that if a law cannot be uniformly enforced, it is just a tool for prosecutors to punish people they do not like.
It is a fascinating idea, though others pointed out it would essentially give too-big-to-fail corporations veto power over any law. They could just break a law on purpose, force the government to look the other way, and thereby invalidate the law for everyone. It is a messy situation, but the overarching sentiment on Hacker News was just a profound sadness for Aaron and a lingering disgust at the two-tiered justice system.
Speaking of corporate behavior that makes you shake your head, let us move to our next story. This one is a technical detective story. The post is titled, "AliExpress Runs Silent Web Audio Fingerprinting That Breaks Bluetooth Multipoint," written by a user named MC Tech.
I loved reading this one because it starts with such a relatable, mundane problem. The author has Bluetooth headphones that support multipoint, meaning they connect to a phone and a PC at the same time. Usually, the PC takes priority, but if the PC is silent, the phone can play music. But the author noticed that whenever they opened the AliExpress homepage, their phone audio would just stop. Closing the tab fixed it instantly.
Right, and there was no video playing on the site, no ads making noise, nothing. So they dug into the code. They wrapped the web audio API in their browser to see what the site was actually doing in the background. It turns out AliExpress is running two highly obfuscated scripts that create hidden audio contexts. They generate a silent sawtooth wave, pass it through the browser's audio implementation, and then measure the output frequencies.
And the reason they do this is for browser fingerprinting, because every combination of operating system, browser version, audio driver, and hardware introduces microscopic differences in how that audio is processed. AliExpress can use that output as a highly unique fingerprint to track you. They combine it with canvas fingerprinting, WebGL data, and mouse movements to detect bots and prevent fraud.
Which makes sense from their perspective. They are fighting massive amounts of scraping and coupon abuse. But from the user's perspective, it is incredibly invasive. And because the volume is set to zero, the browser does not show the little speaker icon on the tap. Your computer thinks it is actively processing audio, which is why the Bluetooth headphones refuse to switch back to the phone.
The comments on this were wild. A lot of people were asking why browsers even allow this in the first place. User LXGar suggested that browsers should just display the speaker icon anytime an audio context exists, even if the volume is zero. If sites are going to use audio for fingerprinting, expose them.
It sparked a bigger conversation about how web browsers have basically become general-purpose operating systems, and maybe that was a mistake. We are handing over access to our media hardware, local network, and graphics processors to random shopping websites just by clicking a link. For anyone dealing with this, the author did provide uBlock origin filters to block the specific Alibaba anti-fraud scripts, though they warned it might trigger more CAPTCHAs when you try to buy something.
Moving from browser annoyances to ecosystem security, our third story is a major supply chain attack in the Rust community. The post is, "Malicious Rust Crate ArrayRef runs a build-time payload," published by SafeDep.
This one is scary because of how deep it goes. ArrayRef is a massively popular Rust crate. It has around 245 million all-time downloads and sits deep in the dependency trees of common graphics and windowing libraries. It turns out the maintainer's account, Drowndy, was compromised.
The attackers were really sophisticated here. They published a new version of ArrayRef, version 0.3.10. Inside this new version, they added a dependency on a typo-squatted crate called Proc Macro 1. The real crate that developers actually use is called Proc Macro 2. This fake Proc Macro 1 was published by an account named DTolney, which is a slight misspelling of David Tolney, a very famous Rust developer.
The payload itself is nasty. It runs a build script during compilation, so just compiling your project is enough to get infected. The script pieces together a base64 encoded IP address, connects to a command and control server, downloads an executable tailored to your operating system, and runs it silently in the background.
But the most devious part of this attack is how they got people to download it. After publishing the malicious version, the attackers yanked the previous safe versions of ArrayRef from crates.io. In the Rust ecosystem, when a package is yanked, the package manager cargo warns you and suggests updating to a non-yanked version. So the tooling itself was actively nudging developers to upgrade to the malware.
That is incredibly clever and terrifying. Thankfully, the crates.io team caught it and removed the malicious versions. But the incident sparked a huge debate on Hacker News about how package registries should handle malware after it is discovered.
Right. User Cube00 pointed out that GitHub completely removed the compromised repositories, so they return a 404 error, and crates.io deleted the packages entirely. A lot of security researchers in the comments argued this is the wrong approach. User DREF made a great point that you want the crate to be unavailable for regular downstream consumers, but you still need it available for security analysis and deterministic reproduction of the compromise.
They suggested there should be a redacted state for packages, something where the package manager refuses to download it normally, but if you pass a specific flag saying you are doing forensic analysis, you can still pull the code. Erasing the history completely makes it really hard for security teams to figure out exactly what the malware did to their systems.
It is a tough balance between protecting the masses and enabling the researchers, but I think the community is leaning heavily toward wanting more transparency rather than silent deletion.
Let us pivot to something a bit more social. Our next story is a website called don'tpastetheai.com. It is a single-page site in the spirit of classic internet etiquette guides like knowhello.net.
I completely resonated with this one. The premise is simple. When someone asks you an honest question in Slack, Discord, or an email, they want your answer. They don't want a giant, generic wall of ChatGPT text that you copied and pasted.
The author writes that it feels fast and helpful to dump a question into a chatbot and paste the result, but it is actually disrespectful of the other person's time. They have the same tools you do. If they wanted the generic AI answer, they would have prompted it themselves. They asked you because they wanted your specific context, your taste, and your judgment.
The site suggests that if you do use AI to draft an answer, which is totally fine, you should at least read it and rewrite it in your own voice. Or just pull out the one sentence that actually answers the question. Do not be a middleman between a human and a robot.
The Hacker News comments were full of people venting about this. A user named Disillusion shared the principles of AI use they just wrote for their company.
Rule number one was write as yourself. They pointed out that pasting AI responses shifts the burden of comprehension entirely onto the reader. AI text is notoriously wordy and full of abstract nouns.
It actually led to a really funny tangent in the comments about voice messages. Someone compared pasting a massive AI response to sending a 5-minute WhatsApp voice memo. In both cases, the sender is optimizing for their own convenience at the massive expense of the receiver.
Yeah, user Bistos mentioned how common voice memos are in Spain and Colombia, and how jarring it is when you just want a quick text but you have to sit there and listen to a rambling audio file. It's the exact same dynamic. Whether it's a wall of AI text or a long voice memo, the underlying message is that my time to produce this was more valuable than your time to consume it.
Exactly. The consensus seems to be that literacy and succinct communication are becoming premium skills. If you can distill an answer down to 2 sentences instead of 3 paragraphs of AI fluff, you are going to stand out in the modern workplace. Finally, let us wrap up with a really fun show, HN. This one is titled, I trained a 125 million parameter model to autocomplete piano on device by a developer named Simon Edwardson. This is such a cool project. Simon built an iOS app called RollTab. You connect your MIDI keyboard to your iPhone, you play a few notes or chords, and the AI model instantly auto-completes the rest of the musical phrase in real time. He describes it as GitHub Copilot, but for the piano.
The technical write-up is fantastic. He explains that standard audio files are too messy, so he used MIDI, which is basically a sequence of events like key press, velocity, and duration. But figuring out how to tokenize music for a transformer model was the hardest part.
Right. He tried the naive approach of having a token for every single event, like note on, note off, and time shift. But the model would drift. It would forget to turn notes off and leave them hanging. So he completely redesigned the representation. He condensed it so each note has its own pitch, delta time, duration, and velocity all bundled together. This allowed the transformer to advance the music one complete note at a time, getting the speed up to 108 notes per second on a standard iPhone.
He trained it on about 300 million note events from public domain classical music. He even added data augmentation, like simulating sloppy playing, so the model could handle human error during live input.
The Hacker News comments were a mix of technical praise and some really deep music theory critique. A user named Jansica, who clearly has a classical background, analyzed the video demo. They pointed out that the AI ended its first phrase with a full cadence instead of a half cadence, which to a classical composer sounds like a run-on sentence. They joked that a student turning that in would get a pretty mediocre grade.
But another user, Tom Vidal, pointed out that this kind of autocomplete is actually how classical composers used to train. They would play a game called Exquisite Corpse, where one composer would write the start of a phrase on sheet music, pass it to the next, and they would have to continue it just by audiating or hearing it in their head.
There was even a great historical anecdote shared about Beethoven. Another musician, named Steibelt, tried to show him up at a party. So Beethoven grabbed Steibelt's sheet music, turned it upside down, picked out a random theme with one finger, and then improvised a masterpiece on the spot just to assert dominance. Steibelt literally ran out of the room and refused to ever be at the same party as Beethoven again.
That is amazing. It just shows that generative music isn't a new concept. We are just substituting an iPhone for Beethoven. It is a really beautiful intersection of centuries-old music theory and cutting-edge machine learning.
It really is. And that brings us to the end of today's episode. From the legacy of Aaron Swartz to Beethoven flexing at a dinner party, the Hacker News community always brings the best context to the table.
Thanks so much for listening, everyone. If you want to dive deeper into any of these stories, you can find them on the front page of Hacker News. We will be back tomorrow with another batch of the internet's most interesting conversations.
Have a great day, and we will catch you tomorrow on HN Pod.